You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio.
TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Talk Zone Radio with your host, Quint Studer. That was, again, Alex Call and Lisa Carey from their CD, Passion and Purpose. We're with Dale Nee, the president of Covenant Hospital, a board member of the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization. We've talked about the great work they do and their national conference. I'm real pleased. I'll be speaking to the National Hospice Work Group, and we've got really a jam-packed day with those individuals and those leaders. And I want to talk about now. We, of course, have a joint venture, Covenant Hospice and Studer Group, that we offer our services to hospices. And what we try to do is bring it in a very cost-effective way, very mission-oriented, so organizations can improve operations. And that's really what we're talking about. Yeah. We sort of call it, how do you improve your bottom line while improving clinical care and patient experiences? And we think we can do that. For our listeners, and if you've listened before, you know there's three components of it. There's aligning goals, which is based on evidence. We normally deal with things like, are we all on the same page, which ties into creating an accountability tool. When I ask leaders what their biggest issue is, it's consistency. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have consistency, it's because we don't have accountability.
Absolutely.
The next thing is, well, gee, I have a shortage of leadership talent. Mm-hmm. In fact, again, my when I met with hospice CEOs, they said, not only do we have a shortage of current talent, mm-hmm. but we don't see any next generation
growing,
of talent that wants to come into this, because we personally have made it look so difficult and painful. Our nurses say, why would I want your job, or why would I want your? So then we go into under aligning goals is that accountability piece and that training piece. Then we move over to aligning behavior, which is, you know, certain things that are non-negotiable that you agree that all the employees and all the leaders do, whether it be how you hire, how you communicate. And then we talk, what you talked about real good is very well, and I know I can tell you when I got my biggest applause in hospice is when I said, you probably don't have low performers in hospice. And they all laughed. Of course, we find that hospice people are so loving and caring. It's a fertile ground for low performers to survive because we end up caretaking employees because it's in our DNA. And you've really, at your organization, really addressed with your leaders how to deal with performance issues, because it's really a value question. The rest of the employees. And then, again, if we have time, you have put in some electronic processes that are way ahead of most healthcare organizations and even way ahead of acute care and hospice. So tell us, you implemented an evaluation tool we called the LEM. And for our listeners, you told a big group I was talking to recently, if there's one thing that you thought changed your hospice, it was the evaluation tool. Can you tell our listeners about that?
The Leadership Evaluation Manager tool, which is a software product, although we used it for 1 year, a stubby pencil, so to speak, in order to get prepared for it. But yes, it did. It was the one thing, the cohesiveness that pulled it all together. Because talking about the alignment, talking about setting goals, holding people accountable. The ability to set up goals for each leader and eventually each of the staff members to add a weighting to what you expect from those goals, to give them some very quantifiable, for the most part, objective measures, and to not overwhelm them with too many goals, but keep it at a manageable level. And then to, on an ongoing basis, whether it's monthly or weekly if you need to, but certainly often enough to ensure that they are being held accountable, will make the best providers or the best staff members really rise up and say, this is wonderful. I like being measured objectively, because so many of us in healthcare have been measured subjectively.
Well, that's a perfect example. I'm going out to speak Friday to a large organization, and one of the things we asked for was their HR, if they had any information on how their leader evals were.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got them. And it's a scattergram.
Right.
And it shows all the leader evals, and they're all very, very high.
Right.
Yet, when I go there, one of the reasons I'm going there is because their performance isn't what they'd want it to be.
Sure.
Yet, the majority of their leaders are getting these great evaluations.
Yes.
yet their performance isn't there.
Right.
And I know for our listeners, it really, we find when you we go to an organization, hospice organizations, and this is normal. This doesn't mean you're doing a bad job. This is just how it is. We get a copy of the evaluation tool.
Right.
If they've got one.
Right.
It's very subjective.
Yes.
Very narrative. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a person cannot perform well and get a good evaluation.
That's correct.
So it is a big change.
Yes.
But I do think, I agree with you, good performers welcome it because it tells them objectively what they have to accomplish.
Exactly.
It's mutual. You don't put unrealistic goals in there.
Yes.
It stair-steps it. It also causes you, when you say waiting, for our listeners, tell us when you mean waiting, what you mean by that.
Well, basically on an individualized basis, sitting down with the person and reaching agreement of the priority, you would say, of one goal over another.
Right.
And so, for example, if you had a nurse, in a hospice setting, and one of the major priorities for that nurse was to improve and to set meet certain benchmarks for documentation of medical records, that waiting might be higher than something that he or she is already excellent at, which might be pain control of patients. So,
that's so crucial, Dale. Here's what we find. If I'm a nurse and I'm good at pain, but I'm not good at documentation, and I get a good evaluation, I will actually do more pain and less documentation.
Exactly.
Because you've already, what you permit, you promote.
You're reinforcing.
Subconsciously, right? You've already reinforced, this is hard for me, I'm not good at it, so I'm going to just stay on pain. Where if you tell me, Quint, thank gosh you're so good on pain, that's a 10% weight, because it can go up to 100%.
Yes.
But, gee, we're going to put documentation at 30% this year.
Yes.
I will then go through the difficulty of learning documentation. And you wouldn't wait at 30 if it wasn't important.
That's right.
My daughter-in-law is a nurse, Danelle,
right,
and she works at Beloit Memorial Hospital, and she's on the documentation committee.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me the other day on the phone that she was sort of frustrated because some nurses really balked at good documentation. And she said they just don't realize that that helps us with reimbursement. And that's not just one hospital. That's all hospitals. It's that connecting the dots. And that also then helps us pay for other care,
absolutely,
pays for better handoffs because the next caregiver knows better what's going on,
exactly,
pays for better clinical outcomes or creates better clinical outcomes. So I think for our listeners, this waiting is paramount, because it helps me know where you want me to spend my time.
Yes. And Quinn, I would say one critical component of this, obviously with your typical nurse, registered nurse, acute care or hospice, it doesn't matter. They're in nursing because they want to help people.
Absolutely.
That's an automatic. But also, I'm a firm believer that you have to answer the question also, what's in it for me beyond being able to be a great nurse? And the answer is rewards and recognition. And so you have to show them that as they perform better, they may not receive necessarily a financial reward, but eventually that would come. But just being recognized in the organization, being able to be the best practice hospice nurse in Marianna, Florida,
right,
is critically important.
And explain why. I think what we have found in our work, that if we take time to the staff to explain why, that compliance goes up.
Yes.
Because I don't think anyone wants, we're working a lot with lean professionals these days because they find that lean put in evidence-based leadership really works.
Right.
And they said they asked a nurse recently how much of your time you're spending with the patient, and they gave an estimate.
Right.
And then they found out it was 17%. And through changing processes, they got them up to 50-something percent.
Exactly.
But we have to. But the nurse at first balked at the process change until they saw the data and realized, like you said, what's in it for me.
Sure.
So you really focused, and you did as good a job as any organization. And we have many examples of evaluations and priorities in our database. So if somebody contacts me, Quint@studergroup.com, I can open up and connect them with someone in
great
that. Let's move away, because the eval, you nailed it.
Yes.
And I think, and also I think your whole senior leadership team gets together then, sees how everybody's being evaluated, the weights, which gets you the alignment.
Right, including mine.
Right.
So they can get on the computer and look at where I am at any 1.5
me and too.
My score.
No, me too.
You
in
too.
Fact,
yes,
this year I can tell our staff I'm focusing on a lot on quality.
Sure.
We have other people focusing on things like growth.
Right.
But my goal this year is to continue to improve quality.
Right.
And my biggest weight at CO is on clinical quality of our care we provide. We have to improve patient care and our clients.
Sure.
Get
absolutely.
Them better.
Absolutely.
Training. You now also then, you were this before we got involved, but I think you've always make it better. Tell us about how you train your leaders at hospice, because I think you do more intense training than most organizations.
Well, but I have to say, you know, Mutual Admiration Society, you and the Studer Group have given us tools that we never dreamed we would be able to have. So I thank you for that.
No, you're welcome.
And you've whatever successes we've had and the patients and families' satisfaction is also due in large part to you and Stuart. So I want to thank you before we run out of time.
So I'm a leader at hospice. I'm a leader at hospice. And, geez, I was a nurse, and I like being a nurse. I was in accounting or patient financial services, and I'm the supervisor.
Right.
Tell me what skills I'm going to learn if I work for you.
Well, first of all, evidence-based leadership, the Studer principles. We have a leader group that meets at least quarterly for 2 days, and we concentrate on the step-by-step process of implementing things within the Studer principles that we need to work on. Anybody, even non-leaders, can participate in that, because if we have a staff member who would like to be a leader who simply has great clinical skills but does not have leadership skills, which can be the kiss of death when they do get promoted.
You've given them you allow them
opportunity.
You allow them to put their toe in the water a little bit.
Absolutely.
Well, if I take a job, I know you're going to give me the training.
Yes.
So I would say, looking at your curriculum, your people know how to understand financial records.
Absolutely.
They understand a pro forma.
Yes.
They understand a business plan.
Absolutely.
They understand how to hire.
Yes.
How to develop.
Right.
I think communication.
Communication.
How to fire.
Yes.
I think you cover
making
those tough decisions.
Yes, absolutely. Literally anything that a manager, supervisor, leader would need to learn, we have a curriculum developed for that, and the leadership development institutes that we have focus on teaching a skill or reinforcing a skill every time we get together. Plus, we have other leadership meetings, and every part of every leadership meeting has an educational component to it, a learning.
Right.
Best practices, for example, celebrating the wins and learning from best practices, a little piece on performance improvement, alignment, all of those things.
Well, here's a best practice you, I think, taught me one time. It was really where you did such a good job identifying the patient and the family's expectations of care.
Yes.
Can you go over that real quickly with our listeners? Because I think that's a national best practice.
Yeah, we're very proud of that, frankly, because traditionally hospice has measured family satisfaction, which is wonderful, but not patient satisfaction. So we have a program called Three Wishes, and when a patient is admitted, we ask them, if they're able to communicate, what are the top three wishes that you want us to do? What do you want us to do for you? We re-ask, if you will, that question on an almost daily basis by anyone who interacts with them, whether it's a nurse or whether it's a volunteer. And because what we found in hospice particularly is a patient may come in on day one in great pain. By the third day, the pain is gone, but they have another goal, another need, all wrapped up in quality of life. And so this is a continual process.
I saw my daughter. Now I'd like to have this happen
Exactly.
My dad asked me about 2 years ago, can I get him back to Sedalia, Missouri before he would die, because he wants to visit his hometown one last time.
Yes, absolutely. Those are the types of things that are very important. So when we talk about that phrase you use, putting life into days when days can't be added to life, in order to do that, you've got to be interacting with the patient and finding out what their needs are on an ongoing basis.
Well, you've done a superb job, Dale Nee, and we're pleased to work with you. And for those of you that want to know more about the Studer Covenant, partnership, if you would just contact me at Quint, Q-U-I-N-T, at Studergroup.com, I'd be glad to share with you. We've just got another hospice sign up, and it's really a way to almost bring a group purchasing mentality to hospices to make this an affordable way. Of course, we always guarantee it, guarantee the bottom line, which helps pay for it, because we think it's out there. Dale, how can somebody, about the wishes, about what you've done, because, you know, you're such a cutting-edge place, or access to such great organizations like National Hospital Palliative Care Organization, how can they contact you directly?
They can certainly contact me on my email, which is dale.nee@covenanthospice.org.
And Nee is K-N?
K-N-E-E, dale.nee. And feel free to call me.
Want to give the number?
850-433-2155.
Well, Dale, I thank all of you. You know, certainly we know, because we're located here, the great care that you give our employees, loved ones who pass away, the education you've done for our community, and the changes you're making, and through the work of the Board of Hospice around the country, the changes that you're helping, so again, that people can maybe not get more days into life, but more life into each day, and that's certainly what our partnership is all about. Well, this is another Talk Zone Radio. Now we're going to go to the calling. What a great way to end this show with the calling about being called into being a difference maker by Alex Call and Lisa Carey. I'm Dale. Thank you very much, and to our listeners, I appreciate you, and have good health.
Thank you.
The calling was calling.
Whisper. The message was unclear, but as time went by, it got so it was all that I could hear.
The calling was calling me,
and I could hear it.
The calling was calling.
Passionate spark.
The calling was calling me,
and I could hear it.
The calling was calling me
in my soul.
The calling was calling me,
I could hear it.
The calling was calling me.
Following my inner voice, I have no regrets at all. I just thank God I was listening when I got the call. I'm not sure when it sparked the fire deep inside that made me want to make a difference, to touch a